You're listening to Honestly Aging by Friends Life Care Vigor, a podcast where we explore what it's like getting older, the peaks, the valleys, and everything in between. In this season of Honestly Aging by Friends Life Care Vigor, we're covering topics related to solo aging. I'm your host, Cheryl Proska. Let's grow old together. On today's episode, I'm joined by Aileen Gerhart, the founder of Beacon Patient Solutions, LLC, and the Navigating Solo Network. Aileen is an independent board-certified patient advocate, national authority on solo aging educator and advocate, certified senior advisor. Aileen is a sought-after speaker and has offered over 100 community education talks and classes since spring 2018. Aileen's dynamic advocacy work includes a focus on solo aging. This expertise led to the fall 2021 founding of her Navigating Solo Network, The Path to Dynamic Solo Aging Starts Here, a national website network and online clearinghouse featuring resources specifically for solo agers. In addition to her groundbreaking work with solo agers, Aileen serves as the vice president of the National Association of Healthcare Advocacy Board of Directors and serves on the steering committee of the Massachusetts Healthcare Advocates. Aileen, welcome, and thank you for being here. How are you today?
Fabulous. Thank you for having me. It's an exciting topic, and I look forward to our discussion.
So, Aileen, you are joining me today to discuss solo aging. We're going to dive into how solo agers can tackle the challenges of navigating today's complex healthcare system, along with resources and facts to help this cohort make informed decisions that reflect their personal values. To get us started, can you frame up solo aging?
Sure. I thought it would be helpful to share a slide for anyone watching visually to discuss solo aging. And then I will also, of course, verbally discuss it as well. So for me, solo aging is a framework. And so it really is a slice of a demographic that's for older adults that are 55 or older, who are without a reliable support system and either have been married or not, or are partnered, live by themselves, live with a partner or a spouse, did not have children, or for a variety of reasons, had children, but unfortunately, those children or other adult family members aren't able to play a role due to someone being estranged or unable or unwilling to assist, or unfortunately outliving their children, or there's a complicated family dynamic. So the foundation for me for framing solo aging is really related to that reliable support system. And so all of these other pieces may come into it as part of someone who might see themselves and self-identify as a solo ager.
And Aileen, to build on what you've presented here, framing up who a solo ager could be identified as, what are the unique needs of the solo agers?
Another great question. And for me, I see it as 7 specific planning needs for solo agers. So when I present it visually and when I discuss it, I talk about these 7 pieces as all being part of a pie, and all being connected. And so the 7 planning needs are healthcare needs and management. And that's really today, tomorrow, and the future. but it's really thinking about all of those timeframes. Advanced care planning, which again, thinks about today, tomorrow, and the future. Residential decisions and transactions. Investments, financial decisions, and money management. An age diverse and robust support network. Legal representation and planning, and then finally, living a dynamic life. So thinking about some of these concrete pieces, and then also thinking about how one thrives going forward as well. So for me, these seven categories and these planning needs are the pieces that when I work with clients, they're specifically focused on related to navigating solo.
That is a lot to consider. And it makes me wonder, what are some barriers that solo agers face in terms of navigating healthcare, decision making, advanced planning, and those the seven
around
pieces
the
that
circle,
you brought up?
Right?
Around the circle.
Around the circle, of course. So, when it comes to navigating healthcare, some of the pieces in the system really can serve as barriers. One that always comes up is transportation to and from either medical appointments or procedures. So if you require someone to sign you out of a procedure due to receiving anesthesia or something else, and you're unable to identify someone who can do that for you, and that has to be someone you know and is willing to do so for you, you may choose not to have that procedure, which again affects someone's health outcome. That delaying a procedure, et cetera, could have a negative effect. Having the ability to get to and from appointments, having someone to sit with you, to listen to information, to take notes, to prompt questions you might have, also can be a barrier if you're without those resources. Things like identifying an emergency contact can serve as a barrier in all different kinds of ways, as well as people having, and these are trusted individuals that you designate, access to your medical information. So because they then can access information that can help you should they need to advocate for you. The other piece that really comes up often are decisional elements. So the idea of navigating a treatment option and trying to figure out after a clinician or a provider has given you informed information, how do you sort all of that out? Who do you talk to about that? How do you bounce things off of someone else? Who can serve in that role? Same thing for researching and accessing reliable information, as well as understanding medical bills and the whole healthcare system and understanding insurance and those pieces. Having trusted people to talk about those things with help make an informed decision that reflects the individual's goals and values. And without that opportunity, that can be impacted. And so it's really important that people think about if they don't have in place the support network they're looking for, to really look to enhance that as much as they can.
I have two follow-up questions to everything you just said.
Mm-hmm.
My first one is, how might solo agers make sure that they do have support for the medical events that you were talking about through advanced care planning?
So for me, I like to turn the process of advanced care planning a little bit on its head from the way people conventionally think about it. Often when someone who self-identifies as a solo ager, often their first concern when it comes to advanced care planning is, I don't have anyone to designate as my healthcare proxy, as my healthcare agent or advocate. They're called different things in different places. And so for me, that designation is the third step. I like to talk about it as advanced care planning in 4D. I know there aren't four dimensions, but for me, the four Ds are deciding what you want and what you don't want, documenting what you want and what you don't want, then finding the right individuals to designate, and then discussing that information. That's where the four Ds come in. Instead of the initial stress of who am I going to assign as my proxy? Because going back to that question about barriers, that model is a barrier for people to do all the other work when it comes to that tough thinking individually about what they want and what they don't want, well before they're even able to discuss it with someone else. And so I like to move the process, I like to shift the parts, especially for solo agers, because I feel that I'd like to eliminate as many barriers as possible. And when people don't feel they have someone to assign or designate, they may not do the whole process. And the rest of the process is really a critical piece of that, that goes along with who we might designate, or the individuals we might designate. Ideally, we would designate two people to serve as our healthcare agent in case one cannot serve. At that time, you have an alternate, but that's an ideal. And when we're talking about solo agers and putting systems in place, sometimes the ideals are not always available.
Would you prefer to age independently in your own home or live in a nursing facility? I know what I'd rather do. Friends Life Care membership offers just that. Plan today for a future lived at home with vitality, independence, growth, and resilience while protecting your savings. Learn about your options at a free seminar or webinar. Register at friendslifecare.org/register or call 215-628-8964. And the sentiment that's coming across for me that's so important is when you think about a big task or setting a big goal or having a big project, you can set up a barrier. You can say that's too hard. I'll never get to the finish line. But using your system and your steps, it does make it seem, and I'm sure it is as you start working on it, a lot. You're giving solo agers the ability to accomplish what needs to be accomplished step by step.
Right. So when you look at that circle that we shared earlier, those seven plans, or when we hear them as a list verbally, right? The immediate response is, whew, that's a lot of work, right? How am I going to get started? I don't have X, Y, and Z, right? And so the ability to break it down. And I always talk about the intentionality of solos planning as a gift to everyone else, because everyone should be thinking about planning. And no one should be making assumptions or presumptions about who might be available. But because of that additional layer of need of being intentional about putting things in place, solo agers are thinking about things and prompting friends and extended family members to think about planning. So I always refer to it as a gift solo agers are giving the rest of us, which I think is, which I really like to share, because sometimes people think about the solo piece in a very individualized, boxed in way, and that's not it at all. Quite honestly, anyone at any point could be navigating something on their own, and to have the tools to do that is really important. So I like to break things down and remind people of small victories. For example, someone who's stressed about solo aging finds this podcast and listens to a little bit of it and the various episodes you've offered, and they press pause and they come back to another part, right? But listening to it and opening the door to that conversation is a great first step, and should be recognized as a first step, so that when you're feeling overwhelmed, and this stuff is hard, really hard, then you can look back and say, I did a little bit of this. I did think about these pieces. I am ready to designate a healthcare proxy or figure out who would be, you know, a good person to do that. What are good characteristics of a healthcare proxy, right? All of those different things, to be able to chip away at it little by little, based on people's comfortability.
So building on that line of thinking, how might solo agers evaluate and enhance their current support system?
So this is where it's interesting. When you look at navigating legal pieces, when you look at navigating residential, when you look at navigating financial, you would think that that would be the top three for the majority of people in terms of things I'm completely stressed about. And those things people are stressed about. But the notion of who can help, who's available now, who might be available in the future, what role can I play in helping other people, is really something that people think about, especially when they're trying to put together the plan of legal pieces and financial pieces and where am I going to live, et cetera. And so the opportunity to engage in community is really important. And there are a lot of outstanding community resources, no matter where people are living. The Village to Village movement, which actually started here in Boston, is all over the country and is an opportunity to become a member of a community where you can access volunteers, vetted vendors often for different kinds of things around the house, educational programming, et cetera. Libraries, community centers, senior centers, councils on aging, faith communities, affinity groups, right? So one of the things in my list of seven planning needs is an age diverse, robust support network. Well, that's a pretty loaded phrase, right? I have to check all of that out. And the reason to remind people about that age diversity is so that people have, first of all, having connections of people of all different ages, generations, life experiences, et cetera, only makes our lives richer. So that's a given. But it also, at a time where we might need help, if everyone in our support network might be in our peer group or close to our peer group, they may be navigating similar kinds of things at similar times. And so availability may not be what you might want, and you might not be able to help somebody out in a way you might want to be able to help them. And so having that age diverse network, and so people ask, how do I act, right? How do I connect with people in different ways? If part of your suggestions were senior centers, councils on aging, right? All of those older adult communities and community organizations, thinking about things like what are referred to as affinity groups. So thinking about things that interest you, whether that's activism, volunteerism, a particular hobby, a particular spending time outside, a particular sport, et cetera, that brings together people based on general interests and possibly less on someone who is focused solely on something they might be going through at a particular time in their life. So book clubs, card groups, movie review groups, people talk about meetup.com as being very useful in people's communities, connecting on social media groups, recognizing that you need to, you know, practice good safety in terms of connecting with others when you connect with people online, but expanding your connections that way is also a great way to expand that network. And to also keep in mind, there are people who often bring up that they feel uncomfortable asking for help, right? The phrase, I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to appear as needing help. I always encourage people to volunteer to help somebody else or to volunteer in general before ever needing help oneself. First of all, it's a great thing to do as a global citizen, right? That's part of us as global citizens, but it also demonstrates that you're interested in helping others. There may be a likelihood that you're gonna need assistance as well, but you're open to figuring that out. And so that also can help in terms of expanding networks as well.
I love that idea. And that sentiment has come up in a number of the podcast episodes that need to start sooner than later with building your intergenerational support mm-hmm. network, community. And I'm thinking about the community where I live, and it's some people that are my age, some people who are younger, some people who are older. And we have a Facebook page where we all share resources. And some of the best resources have come from an older couple whose uh-huh. children live further away. And from that alone, I've become close with them. So really, if they needed some help from me,
right,
they've kind of been building up their, you know, probably not on purpose, but they've been building up their bank.
Of course. With
people within the community, I'm sure, would reach out and help them. So it's it's hitting very close to my life right now.
Right. And that's a great resource. If there are people who are, you know, feel comfortable utilizing Facebook or other social media tools, those are great ways to connect. There are a number of solo aging Facebook groups online as well. And so the other piece of this, as we look forward, is that we know that the baby boomer generation, a quarter of baby boomers did not have children. And we know we have a caregiving shortage. That isn't something I would ever have to tell anyone hosting a podcast like yours, right? So when you, I like to say, when you put that in a blender, right, we need that intentionality of planning really should resonate with everyone in terms of who is part of my local and extended support system. Who, you know, I talk about it as who is my 3 a.m. person, right? Or people that if at 3 a.m. I needed something, whatever that is, who could I reach out to? And that, too, even that question can feel like a barrier to someone who's immediately hearing that and saying, I don't have a 3 a.m. person, right? So, okay, that's okay. Go back to how do you expand and enhance your already existing and start there. How do you nurture the relationships you already have, right? And that's hard. Making new connections as we age is really hard. You know, different feeder patterns. We talk about things there's a whole social construct about places, first place, second place, and third places. And then the notion that the first place in our world is our home, where we have the most intimate of connections, whatever our home structure looks like. Our second place is often our workplace, where we foster other connections. Well, there's a time when if we're no longer in a workplace, I like to suggest to people and remind people that if they are volunteering or they're part of a community they go to regularly, think of that as a second place. And then a third place, our third places are all the other places we interact with throughout our day, week, month, year. So you see the same person at the salon, you see the same person at a bank getting coffee, at the library, in a group. Those could be opportunities to enhance relationships and to not overlook those other connections, because they are a part of our world. Not everyone you connect with in the grocery store is going to be a lifelong friend. I understand that. But thinking about what is my routine, who are the people I see on a regular basis, and what role might they currently play, and is there an opportunity to enhance that, is an additional way to think about strengthening support networks and expanding them.
And that advice is pertinent to anyone. I'm thinking of myself again, where after college, it becomes harder to make new friends. So what did I do? One, I focused on what I had. And two, I focused on where am I just feeling, sensing some other connections that I thought I could build upon, because you don't just have thousands of people at my disposal to be out and about with. So I understand what it's like to have to be intentional about relationship building.
Right. And so also in different periods of life, if people did not have children, people who did have children might have connections through their child or children going through a school system or an organized sport or something. Those are other feeder patterns, right? Mm-hmm. To connecting with other people experiencing similar things. So when you look at social structures for solo agers and for people who had children, they have different layers, because often people with children have made connections with their children's friends, parents, et cetera, and over time, possibly grandchildren's friends and connections. And so that can expand one's connections organically in some way, right? Because it's just, you know, to the analogy of being in college, right? You're connected to all these other people experiencing a similar thing. So whether you've retired and you're no longer in the workplace, and so that those connections are harder to foster, or there are different feeder patterns that aren't part of your world, then that intentionality becomes even more critical. The other thing people talk about all the time in the discussion around these seven planning needs and all of that is there anyone who can hold me accountable? Right. Mm-hmm. And so the discussion around creating an accountability group, if you and three other people or two other people or one other person are thinking about these things, they may self-identify as a solo ager, they may not. But if you're thinking about these things, the opportunity to talk about them with other people and then say, hey, in a couple of weeks, and put it on a calendar, whether that's digital or paper, in a couple of weeks, let's circle back and what did, you know, and talk about who you decided to work with on financial, et cetera, or what you're thinking about as your priorities for housing, you know, all of these different things, so that you, right, because human nature, when things are hard, it's way more fun to procrastinate than to do the hard stuff, right? So, and this stuff is hard. It can feel very overwhelming. It can feel emotionally draining, and it can feel isolating. And so the idea is not to set anyone up for that, but rather to feel that they have the support to navigate that. That's what the gift of this podcast and the various episodes and other resources give people the opportunity to think about that at their own pace. Like I said, you can hit pause. You can go back and listen to something again, over and over again, right? So because everyone takes in information differently, and where people are in a process, is every single person listening to this conversation is in a different place in this process. And so it's really, really valuable to have the opportunity to talk about this and also to give, to prompt people to be able to start thinking. Again, not about everything at one time, just slowly little bits of it. And you'll find that as you put it together, you've done a lot more than you think you have.
And over the course of our conversation, you've mentioned some wonderful resources for solo agers to refer to. Can you possibly suggest additional websites or books for our solo agers? And also, I'd love to hear more about the clearinghouse that you develop, navigatingsolo.com.
Sure. So first and foremost, the woman who coined the phrase solo ager is a woman named Sarah Zeff Geber. She lives in Northern California. She wrote the first book on solo aging called Essential Retirement Planning for Solo Agers. And it's a fantastic book with resources and worksheets. It was published in 2018. And shortly thereafter, Joy Laverty, who's in Chicago and also a solo aging trailblazer, published a book called Who Will Take Care of Me When I'm Old? And both Sarah's book and Joy's book are available in library systems. And the reason I bring that up is because people have all different means and also interests in accumulating books or not accumulating books in terms of possessing them on their own, but rather to gain the information. And so both of their books are available in libraries. They're outstanding resources. I definitely recommend exploring those. Joy is also a caregiving expert as well, and has the Elder Care Planner that's actually being revised soon as well, that also came out in the early 2018s. And then Carol Merrick, who is based in Texas and started something called the Elder Orphan Facebook group. Elder orphan was a phrase before solo ager came along that was a clinical phrase utilized by a geriatrician to identify some of her patients in a clinical setting. The phrase kind of stuck for a while. And so Carol created the Elder Orphan Facebook group, and it now has over 10,000 members. It has offshoots, people, book groups, and relocating and different geographies, et cetera. And there are a number of other solo aging or aging solo Facebook groups. If someone is interested in connecting with those, you can, if when you use Facebook, just do a search for aging solo or solo aging, and you will come, you'll see the different groups. Many are started by self-identified solo agers who are looking to connect with other people and other resources. So all of that was sort of in play. But I realized that in my work with solo agers, I was putting together and identifying different professionals around the country, different experts around the country, who had knowledge about solo aging, but there wasn't a go-to place for that. And solo aging and solo agers really deserve the resources that are crafted just for them, right? And to recognize these unique needs, although they certainly resonate with many people. I like to sort of say it as from the ground up, right? It kind of works this way. Solo agers have identified this intentionality and again, that gift of giving it to others. And so because that there wasn't a one-stop shop, I, in the fall of 2021, I put together a website called NavigatingSolo.com, the Navigating Solo Network. And it has a free resource library that has all kinds of media and resources available. So due to our life circumstances navigating the pandemic, a number of programs went online. A number of them were recorded with permission of the speaker, of course. And so some of the talks on solo aging were recorded and are by various thought leaders. And so there is a part of the library, the resource library, that includes videos and talks. There is part of the library that includes podcasts and interviews, and I will be updating to include a number of the episodes from this podcast, which will be definitely relevant to folks who visit the site. There are links to articles on all different subjects related to solo aging. So those seven pieces of housing and advanced care planning and my network and legal and navigating medical, when articles come up that are related to solo aging, they are linked, as well as the books that I mentioned earlier. They're on there as well. And also there's research that's available. The Census Bureau finally in 2020 actually looked at solo agers for the very first time. And AARP has done two sets of exploring and surveying solo agers and generated some research on that as well. And so there's also research available. So to try and be as comprehensive as possible about the subject, and people can just visit the resource library and access whatever would be helpful to them. Anything that's posted has permission to be posted. It's not that I just Google the internet and decide, right? I'm not, you know, any speaker, any episode, anything is there because it's been approved to be there. So they're reliable resources. And so one thing I have done with the website as well is offered two times a year a free virtual gathering for self-identified solos. We've had our late August one, which is coming up August 31st, currently has, I think there are 100 registrants so far, and we have quite a bit of time to go, from 14 US states thus far. Our last one in March had, I think we had 70 or 80 attendees. We had more registrants who weren't able to join us. And we had folks, again, from 13 different states, Canada and Mexico. So people want to connect with each other, and that's the idea. So things to be looking forward to in terms of putting together regional groups for people so they can identify based on making some connections in real time, using some online community tools to do that. Using technology for the benefit of connecting other people. I'm in the middle of writing a workbook, those kinds of things, to be able to continue to build on the resources and the foundation and the continued work of folks who I mentioned earlier were really solo aging trailblazers, and really be able to provide as many resources as possible for folks.
So what I'd love to do in closing would be, is there any way possible to bring together all of this knowledge that you've instilled upon us and provide an overview for how our listeners can at least begin to develop an organized solo aging plan?
Mm-hmm. So I often, when I give talks, and I'm fortunate to give them locally here in Massachusetts, and I'm fortunate all over the country, I usually provide a resource sheet on the topic that I'm speaking about. And so if that would be something that would be helpful as part of accessing the episode, someone could download that I'm certainly open to that. I think in general, the hopefully people can go back, rewind, pause, think about things, right? But in general, just thinking about where you are and where you want to go, and then slowly putting those pieces together, being incredibly patient with oneself. This is hard, really, really hard. I know I've said that multiple times, but I often, when I give talks, my biggest fear is that everyone's going to be looking out at me, whether that's a Zoom talk or an in-person audience, completely overwhelmed. And now I have to build them back up, right? Because this is hard stuff. And these are hard pieces to navigate. And one thing we didn't talk about is not only do we need to plan, but then we need to revisit the plan, revise it as needed, and come back again. That's for another discussion because we don't want to lose people at the end of this episode. So really being patient, identifying where you think the gaps are. And if you feel like there are a lot of gaps, that's okay. Go back to those seven pieces and think about, okay, who is part of my world now and available to help? And that includes, are there professionals to reach out to who are knowledgeable about solo aging or who work in navigating healthcare or who help people with planning or all of the above? But to include the potential of professionals, and I realize that also takes funds and resources that way as well. But to think about who helps me now and who might I need to help me in the future and with what might I need help in the future. And so by identifying those things, and I always remind people, and this is really hard, to turn off the inner soundtrack, which is, I don't have this, I don't have that. Oh my goodness, everyone else, blah, 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 right? And the reality is everybody needs to be thinking about this. And if they've already put a plan together, they need to be reminded to go back, revisit it, make sure it reflects what they want today, tomorrow, and then continue to work on it. This is a lifelong process. And so I would encourage people to be patient with themselves as much as we can be, and to really acknowledge small victories, and your small victory and your neighbor's small victory may feel completely different, but recognize them. Listening to this podcast, listening to another episode, watching a talk, attending a talk, going to a group, whatever it is, you know, that those pieces, when you put them together, you will find that there is more in place than you thought most often. And that there are people to assist and ways to learn and further reinforce what we've talked about through other experts and other conversations as well, and to just keep at it.
Aileen, thank you so much for sharing all your solo aging expertise with our listeners today. I'm so excited to bring this episode to our audience and start giving them the tools they need to set themselves up for success one step at a time as they age.
Thank you very much for having me. As you can see, I am extraordinarily passionate about this subject. And so any opportunity to have a really robust conversation about it and know that I can help someone else is so valuable.
Thank you for listening to Honestly Aging by Friends Life Care Vigor, a unique program focused on aging with vitality, independence, growth, and resilience. You can find links and show notes from this episode on our website at friendslifecare.org/podcast. Thank you to Aileen Gerhart for joining us today. You can learn more about Aileen on LinkedIn and by visiting her website, beaconpatientsolutions.com. Links to these resources and Aileen's Navigating Solo Clearinghouse can be found in the show notes. If you like our show, please rate, review, subscribe, and join us next time. To learn more about aging with vitality, independence, growth, and resilience, subscribe to our blog at friendslifecare.org/blog.